Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Hey guys, it's DJ Jesse Janity, and I want to tell you guys a little bit about TrueCar. TrueCar is changing car buying forever. TrueCar helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Just in the first 6 months of this year, over 275,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. And TrueCar users save an average of $3,221 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com to find out what others paid for the car you want. Then, register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Third step is simple. Just print out your savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Some features may not be available in all states, but to see how much you can save on the car you want, simply download the TrueCar mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
Tuning into the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans. Producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows. Interviewing celebrities and showrunners. And bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hey guys, and welcome to the Walking Dead After Buzz After Show. Once again, full crew here with Joyce Ajuri.
Hey guys.
Daryl Kristen.
What's up, everybody?
Nando Velasquez.
Hello, hello.
And guys, I'm Dave Klein, and welcome back. And this time, this is the first time in many, many episodes that we've actually gotten multiple storylines as opposed to following one specific storyline. This hasn't happened almost this entire season.
Yeah.
So we're actually going to break it up by storylines for a change.
Nice.
Can I just give a quick impression? I was confused by this episode only because I just want to bring this up as a starter because it's some of these people you haven't seen in 3 or 4 weeks.
Right.
And they're starting like as if like no time has passed. Like that first scene with Sasha, for example.
Yeah.
And yet little things like we know who was with Daryl now from 2 weeks ago, but they don't even show us like that whole rest of that reaction. They move
that's
forward
true.
In that.
That's a good point.
There were a lot of moments in this episode where I was like, what is happening? What has happened?
I guess they're just like, hey,
they just kind of glaze over. The writers just kind of glaze over those moments.
I mean, I think it's great because it was very intertwined, and I guess the name of the episode's Crossed, so I guess that makes sense. But I'm really unclear as to exactly how much time has passed based on everything that's going on from these, what, 3 or 4 storylines.
Yeah. Can be a little confusing.
Yeah, but I just wanted to bring that up because I thought I don't know how else we can bring it up.
I definitely agree. It's odd when I mean one thing is literally like a scene later, and then other ones we're supposed to assume like oh it's been a couple of days, and then fewer a couple hours later, like Abraham's storyline was supposed to be later that day.
Yeah. It seemed like it was exactly like, where it left
like,
off.
Yeah, it felt like right after they left off, but when they were mentioning and talking about it, it'd been hours and hours. But regardless, beginning of what we have with the main crew is we get, this is going to be the split off point, but this is where they're going to be heading off, take care of business. So, Sasha angrily chopping off some bench seats, Gabriel really freaking out over his church's destruction and having probably a lot of questions of faith that we're going to really see throughout the episode for his storyline. Yeah. But this is really where we get that separation, where once again we've got the crew staying at home, probably a lot specifically so someone can watch over Judith, I'd assume. And Gabriel needs to watch it over too. I don't know who's more of a hazard, really, Judith or Gabriel. That's a good question.
I'm going to go with Gabriel. I'm ready for him to go. I just have to be honest.
Yeah, same here. And yeah. I was saying that Gabriel's kind of like what Carl used to be, like kind of just running off, like doing his own thing, or kind of not really understanding the scope of the issues and, you know, not acting accordingly.
Yeah.
But Yeah, no, absolutely. I think he's really conflicted. I mean, it's interesting because no one's really concentrating on him too, but we see, like, even in the first moments when he's looking at the back of the church where they wrote, "You'll burn for this."
Yeah.
And he's, or when he's scrubbing the blood out of the wall, out of the floor. Like, this is a man who's going through, like, an internal battle.
I feel like this is probably the first time he's really not felt at home in the church, you know, not felt comfortable. And he was fine on his own, despite his feelings and the way he, you know, was acting out about this whole thing. But this time, I feel like, was the first time he actually resented not only the people that kind of commandeered it, but the church itself.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
Well, I think, if we could stick on Gabriel for a second.
Yeah, let's just stick on
really,
the storyline.
I think he's really, really interesting, his character, because, you know, he obviously doesn't want to kill anybody, and we see that later on. Even he can't kill a walker when he sees the cross. But I think, like, the way I look at the church, the way they ransacked the church, and Sasha, like, went to town on that pew, and they started taking everything out for their rescue mission, is, you know, this is like, this was his church, this was a holy place, and it's ruined. And it's almost more like his tomb. And I really saw him, I really saw him, like, using that machete to get out, like, trying to get out of his tomb.
Like, he didn't want to die there.
Yeah.
Like, there's no longer a place of sanctuary where he could peacefully just kind of go if he wanted to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a big theme. I'm trying to figure it out still because we just saw the episode, and I was watching Homeland in between my viewing, so forgive me. But I think a big theme – I'm doing two shows. But I think a big theme is purpose. A lot of these people are trying to figure out what their purpose is. And I think that's a big thing that's questioning Gabriel. What's his purpose in a world where – you know, where it's apparently okay to kill people, you know, where, you know, Carl's teaching him how to, a kid is teaching him how to defend himself and what weapon to choose.
Yeah, and I think when we were watching, I think Stephen made a good point, is when you saw him breaking out of the church, it's like, well, if it's so easy to break out of the church, how come it wasn't so easy for the others to break into the church through that same type of going right underneath the church and pulling up the boards?
Yeah, like, it's so easy to access.
Yeah.
If they really wanted to get in, they could have easily broken through.
Yeah.
Because they were too busy with the knife on the walls going, burn it up!
They have scoped out this whole church and
they don't have walkers on their butt while they're doing... I mean, he didn't have a walker on his butt while he was doing that.
I mean, sure. But
yeah, it was still like they had time to really carve out.
Yeah, they had carving
burn,
out of
like,
things.
Like, you're going to go to hell.
Yeah.
I think the bigger question, for me at least, is... I think if Gabriel wanted to leave, like, who's stopping him from leaving? Here he is doing this whole, I'm gonna bring a machete in, and while no one's looking, they think I'm gonna sneak. It's no one's holding him prisoner. I think if he just wanted to go, this is the group that's not gonna keep him captive.
Yeah.
But then what's his plan? Like, what does he want to do? I mean, that's what I was thinking the whole time he was walking out. I'm like, what does he think is going to happen when he walks out? I think Stephen also said the will of Christ or whatever will save him or something.
Yeah.
But it's like he doesn't really. It seems like he's kind of questioning whether or not he believes that. So what's going to save him?
I think though on what you're asking, Nando, is I think for him he still doesn't really trust this group because this is a group of people who just murdered people in front of him, alive people, not just walkers. They did, but he's questioning what he believes. And again, like. He doesn't really know this group like we know this group. So, yeah, as viewers, we can be like, well, this is the group who's going to let him go, who's kind. But he doesn't know that. He just witnessed some people be aggressive towards him when he first met them, murder people in front of him. Even if it was saving him, it was murdering people in front of him, which he's not used to seeing.
Yeah.
And so, like, he's, from his perspective, his point of view, he really doesn't know them at all.
Well, he's been hiding from all of this.
Exactly. And he chose to in his defense. And, mm-hmm. like, with that, he doesn't really know what the hell is happening out there.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's like, as viewers, we see this group as someone who could keep him alive, and he's just not budging.
I think the cross thing is going to be important at the end of the episode, because if anything, maybe it'll show him, even though he couldn't kill the walker at the end, that could be for him an indicator of belief's not going to save you, because this is someone who clearly had turned, who was a believer.
It's a good point.
So maybe that could be an indicator to him, or it was simply for the fact of him not being able to do it. But I think that could be the direction they might take.
Right before he did that, I mean, he did that awesome body slam.
Yeah.
You know, that
he's
was
like, damn, you took wrestling. Now. I didn't know that. Jeez.
That was an awesome
move.
Has
he been doing push-ups while he's been locked up? Yeah.
Well, how much did that walker weigh, really? Right. But he did that big move, and it was like got very violent, and I think it's just that one little grasp of morality. The one thing I want to bring up too, I just think it's weird and please feel free to comment on this. When he escaped, he stepped on a nail. Yeah. And at first it was nothing, but then I was thinking about this, and I have no idea there's a connection here. But, you know, like when Christ was crucified.
I understand what you're saying.
They crucified him by putting nails on, you know, in his hands and his feet. So I almost wondered if there was a religious significance that was meant for that to happen as he was escaping.
I wouldn't be surprised if that were the case.
I also wonder how rusty the nail was, because that could cause a horrible disease, and he could die from that.
And he started limping, and that was kind of interesting,
Well, yeah, well, it's probably a huge amount of pain. That was drilled in there deep when you look at how much blood was in
there. I was cringing as he was pulling that. I was like, I can't deal. I can't handle this.
Yeah. So, but speaking of him and his character, I know, Joyce, you'd actually pulled what the line said from the...
The scriptures that were listed on the board. I know we questioned it a couple episodes back, and there was an article written out. They actually researched what the passages were, and they really do tie in with the theme of the show in terms of like zombies and The Walking Dead and all that stuff. So it might take a couple minutes, but I'll read them out to you really quick. So the first one is Romans 6:4. And it says, "For we are buried together with him by baptism into death, that is, Christ is risen from the dead by the glory of the Father, so we also may walk in the newness of life." Next one is Ezekiel 37:7, and it says, "And I prophesied as he had commanded me, and as I prophesied, there was a noise, and behold, a commotion, and the bones came together, each one to its joint." So it's like the dead kind of composing themselves into... Walking Dead. That's what I got from it. Next one's Matthew 27:52, "And the graves were opened, and many bodies of the saints that had slept arose." Next one is Revelation 9:6, "And in those days men shall seek death and shall not find it, and then they shall desire to die, and death shall fly from them." And the last one is Luke 24:5, "And as they were afraid and bowed down their countenance towards the ground, they said unto them, Why seek you the living with the dead?" So obviously it has to do with, you know, the dead coming back and people not being the same and everything. But what I want to know mostly is, was this coincidentally their last service? Mm. Or did he put those up after the whole thing happened?
I'd assume he put those up, because, I mean, those are all... different passages from different times, right?
So. I think the question, well, because I do remember reading this from a couple of weeks ago about the passages, so I'm almost wondering if they're the same passages or not. I can't remember what the passages were.
I'm not sure, actually. I mean, I think...
But it'd be really cool if they changed the passages and we didn't realize it. That would be really interesting.
I don't remember if the article implied that they were the same ones or not, but I'm going to say they were.
That'd take a really sharp viewer to find that and be like, oh my God, it's different passages.
Like, I would not think to go through the Bible.
Or I suppose some people do just know offhand and be like, oh my God, that's a different one. So yeah, some people can't offhand do that.
Yeah.
But the other characters that we have gathered around him are namely Carl, Judith, and Michonne. And there's not too much from their development within this except for just trying to be helpful, and that's about all we get out of it.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting, too, is kind of like with Michonne, even. It's almost like she and Sasha are switching personalities. You know, it's like we got that Michonne was so tough, you know, in previous seasons. And this time she was even soft with Gabriel, the way that she kind of was compassionate with him and speaking with him when he was behind the doors. And now we see kind of, we'll talk about it later, but like Sasha's like hard and bitter, like, where that's kind of the way Michonne originally was. And I was seeing a different side of her. You know?
It's that side that opened up with Carl, really, a lot. They kind of bonded a lot less.
She definitely stepped back from her usual attitude that we're used to, but I like it. I like seeing that side of her.
Yeah.
It's like,
absolutely.
We know more about her life, and we know more of where she comes from.
Yeah. Well, it makes her more three-dimensional.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was confused, though, when Carl was trying to teach or tell Gabriel that you need to learn how to use these weapons. She was looking in that direction. I don't know if it was towards Carl or towards Gabriel, but I was confused. Like, was she proud of Carl? Was she, like, scared of the way Carl's kind of been acting lately? He's acting more and more like Rick, a little more hardened. Or was it more about Gabriel? I don't know.
Yeah, because it was also...
I thought it was towards Gabriel, just because of the... After her having that conversation with him also, I just felt like it was more geared towards him in that.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess it's just there's that interesting part where when Carl was kind of explaining how the group goes, when he's like, well, we just move on and it's not safe to stay in one place. When he's talking about that, that's when I noticed Michonne give it an odd look. So I was wondering that too. I kind of noted that as well, that she gave it an awful look.
What does it mean?
I don't know.
Because everything means something in this show, guys.
Yes.
Yeah. No, the scriptures didn't mean anything. It wasn't just coincidence. Yeah. Even though they built the church,
yeah, there's always a hidden message somewhere.
Coincidence.
But well, we'll see what happens with Gabriel, I guess, as he's out on his own, And, you know, he got rid of one walker. He didn't kill him completely, yeah. but he got rid of one walker.
He's moving up slowly.
I'm ready for him to peace out, Gabriel. I'm over him. Sorry. Sorry.
Yeah, well, could be soon, especially if that nail gives him rusty nail disease. I forget, the name of
it's rusty nail
disease. It's, I think it's Lyme disease. Yeah, I think it's Lyme disease.
Limestone.
Rusty nail disease is what I'm calling it. The other group that we have is the main crew who end up heading out at this point, and Rick specifically not wanting to go to Atlanta, but he feels he owes Carol, so that's why he goes instead of Michonne, and Michonne's going to stay back and watch. So he actually does feel really bad about what he did in the past, especially after she sort of saved everybody.
Yeah.
And that's what leads them off, and we really have a lot with Sasha's storyline in this episode. It was a lot about Sasha and Tyrese and their familial, I was going to say brotherhood, but sisterhood. Familialhood?
Yeah.
Kinship?
Kinship.
So it was really about that storyline of just Tyrese and just wanting to constantly help, and Sasha not being able to accept it, which I completely understand. I mean, it's almost like the same thing if you go through a breakup without someone dying.
Yeah.
It's like everyone can say, well, I've been through a terrible breakup too. It sucks. And, you know, you know that. You understand that, but it still doesn't mean you want to talk about it. You kind of just, you need your own time to process and get over things. And it doesn't matter if someone's done it too. It's still, for you, a horrible situation.
But, and this is ironically one of the moments when it's like, you know, like, what happened with Sasha? Why is she acting this way? You know, it took a couple of weeks ago. You know, but she obviously lost Bob, and then here she is doing this crazy, like, chopping up the pew, and obviously Tyrese sees the problem with her, and a lot of the communication between the two of them is about, you know, Tyrese going through this before, and her feeling guilty for not doing the parting shot to Bob, giving him the, I guess, the respect herself.
Yeah.
The old yeller shot.
But, I mean, like I said, it was jarring for a second, but I totally, it's easy to get back onto it. Yeah. But I just loved her, just trying to deal with this. And she's kind of a little, you know, it seemed like she could be a little unstable on this trip.
Absolutely.
Like, she could be definitely a detriment to the group, as we, I think we see at the end, maybe she is.
Well, and I think that Tyrese was trying to tell her to, like, let it go, you know, like, it's okay, but let it go. And I think that's just realistic. I mean, she probably was in the shock factor the first couple of weeks right after Bob died, and then now it's like sinking in, and they're still in the church, and all these things are happening.
Yep.
It's really hitting her now, just even in the scene where she ripped his jacket, and she was completely upset about that. You know, it's all hitting her. You know, that's what I took it as.
And Tyrese has a great point, which is that at least you got to say goodbye, which he never got to have, so at least you got that final thing, you got to say goodbye.
It ended nicely.
Right, like it ended really well, as opposed to just like, I mean, you hear about accidents where someone loses a family member and they never got a chance to finally, like, say I love you before it happened. They're really upset about that one thing. So at least she got that, but it still is just, you kind of need your own personal space, I think, for anything like this, just to sort it out with yourself, and then you can start to heal. But I think you first need to deal with those emotions.
Yeah.
But I think she also kind of lost her purpose, because she, you know, I think she's just struggling with this. And Tyrese kind of gave her that. I think that moment when Tyrese was like, I did this. I have to look for my notes, but he's like, I did this for you. I was here to help you out. And I think that kind of gave her, like, we get to persevere with each other.
Yeah.
And Bob might have been the love of her life for that moment, or whatever, without getting all...
For those couple of months.
Yeah, he was just a fling.
Soap opera.
But at least she still has her brother.
Yeah. She still has her brother.
He was just a fling.
But, I mean, it's also probably helping him, because he's gone through it, too. You know, he went through it with...
What was her name? Karen.
It was Karen.
I'm afraid to say the wrong name.
Yeah, no, it was Karen. That's
like,
right.
We're improvising this right now.
We're improvising this, right? Karen, you know, he went through that, so he understands what she's going through. So I think that's also his compassion part with that.
I think they just need to get to the hospital so she can talk to Beth, who's gone through it multiple times. Right. She just doesn't care at all.
Beth has gotten the worst. Between Beth and Rick, I think, maybe.
Beth just, like that one boyfriend she had briefly, who she wouldn't refer to as boyfriend.
She's like, whatever.
And then he dies, she's like, oh, well, I don't care. Whatever.
I can't think of it anyway.
Doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
So the group ends up coming up with multiple plans. The first plan is to go stealth style, go in and take them out one by one.
Slit some throats.
Problem is, if it goes wrong, all hell breaks loose, as Tyrese points out, bolts flying everywhere. So they come up with this alternate plan, or Tyrese does specifically, which is, and then Daryl backing him up. The idea is, let's capture a couple of them and then trade.
Well, it's funny, because Tyrese in some ways is kind of similar to Gabriel in the sense that he doesn't want to kill. like unnecessarily.
Right.
I think what was an interesting surprise was Daryl agreed with him.
But he will, though.
He will. Well, yeah.
Gabriel will not at all.
Well, I mean, I think that's the point is that Tyrese doesn't want to, but will do it when push comes to shove.
He's still that gentle giant.
Right.
Yeah, that we joke about every now and then. But he still is that. And when he hears that Daryl might have to slit a throat and they have to kill like all these people until they eventually outnumber Dawn and whoever's left, you know, he goes with the trade.
Yeah.
Which is really, really interesting plan. You know, it's interesting. I already mentioned that I also do Homeland, and a couple of weeks ago, I think we mentioned that there were some similarities. There was actually some similarities between these. It's almost like the writers are doubling up, but I won't say anything else. Although there was a trade in this week's episode. But Daryl agreeing with it, I thought was really, really interesting too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought that was really cool.
I did like Tyrese's plan off the bat way better than Rick's.
Well, I mean, it makes sense why Daryl would agree, too, because it's just like, well, there is the chance, as Tyrese pointed out, that we mess up once. There's a guard who's offhand in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
They have guns. They have a lot of guns and a lot of people, and we're just screwed. Whereas in this situation...
I don't agree. I don't think Tyrese was thinking that way. I think Tyrese was just trying to come up with anything to not do that.
No, I'm talking about why Daryl was agreeing. I think Daryl, like from an outside perspective, as Daryl, you know, he could go either way. I think he's very neutral.
Mm.
You know, this sounds like, you know, this is a plan where we're probably going to be safer. So you really do want the safer plan. That's what you always want to go with. So that's the plan they end up taking.
I would have sided with Rick. I would have. Maybe I'm getting heartless watching this show, but I would have sided with Rick. Not knowing Dawn or if any of the people were good in the hospital, I would have sided with
Rick. I'm not saying Rick's plan wouldn't work. I'm sure it would because Rick's plans usually do come out fruitful in the end.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at the end, would Dawn really care about the cops they're trying to trade? Like, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I guess that's where you trust Noah, who's your insider source.
Yeah, but he was wrong.
But I'm saying, like, given what you know at the time, though, you don't know that he's wrong. You think he's the insider source. That's what you got. That's how you know everything. And based off of the info, I probably also would have gone with this alternate plan, specifically more for the sake of it seems the way they handled it and took care of it, it was pretty easy for them to capture a few guards, at least two guards until the third one showed up. I mean, that was... pretty easy to handle, take care of. That type of thing just works. It's easier because you can use that element of surprise, which they still want to use in the first plan, but this is like a safer zone where they're outside. So, I mean, they could have captured those cops and then maybe gone with the silent stealth plan afterwards, gone Splinter Cell on them right afterwards. But, but I think, like, off the bat, I still would have initially been like, it's a good idea to capture a few people, and three heads is better than two, as Daryl also points out.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's when they get into that part where then they go ahead and execute the plan, and works nicely at first with Bob being the bait. Or not Bob, excuse
Noah.
Me. Bob
Noah being the bait.
They actually dragged Bob out of the grave and threw him in there. Yeah, thank you. Noah being the bait.
They almost ran Noah over, which I thought was pretty crazy, too, even.
Poor kid.
So, Nando, on your side, though, is Baja Val in the chat saying, I go with Rick's plan, too. I wouldn't trust the trade, especially with the shady cops.
Here we go.
But then again, like, you just don't know. I don't know. We don't know how shady the cops are outside what Noah says from this outside perspective. But you do have someone on your side. That's what my point is. All right. You're not alone.
Thank you. I'm not alone.
So,
I don't think I'm alone. I think other people might agree with me. You know, but we starts with one. It starts with one.
Yeah, it starts with one.
You have to build that momentum.
Got it.
Then you get the mob mentality. So... after that point, that's when things kind of go to hell briefly in a really weird way, where this cop car shows up, but there's only one cop in it, and he's somehow able to get both of the captured cops, both Shepard and Lamson.
Yeah,
Shepard and Lamson into the car and drive away, despite the fact that multiple bullets were shot into the windshield, where he was the driver's side of the windshield. They were probably shooting the tires, it looked like.
We thought Sasha shot the tire, like, at the very last second, because I saw a bunch of air. Granted, it could have been, like, dust kicking up from the tires, but I could have sworn she shot at least one tire, so. Mm. If anyone saw that, clear it up.
We're also talking about a group who, as much as, like, Sasha was bragging, oh, yeah, I can take care of any walker, I'm a good shot. These are all good shots!
Yeah.
It's one of those, like, cases cops. Where when it's humans... all of a sudden, everyone's a stormtrooper and can't shoot for shit. But when it's walkers, they're the best shots in the world. It's just...
And two of them were handcuffed.
Yeah, right. Two of them were handcuffed. Yeah.
Two of them were handcuffed.
Like, this is stuff to me where it gets like, all right, like, I understand you want to be able to move the storyline the way you would, but it'd be nice if shows would just handle things where it keeps in the area of consistency.
Can we justify it by saying perhaps
walkers are slow and teams run?
Perhaps Rick's group was like just trying to scare them, and we're just purposely bad shooting badly, and like hopefully
kind of like the Terminus people at the end of last season.
Yeah, with the hopes of like catching up to them and like actually going through the plan. Can we just say
that? Look, I'm willing to just heat of the moment. They were surprised. I don't think you're not like framing up and shooting someone.
No,
you're just like,
I mean, I know walkers are slow. This is very heat of the moment.
Yeah.
But it's like,
I'm willing to forgive them.
But
it
also didn't seem like they got very far, because then when we see the car in the next scene with the walker
like the
arm on the tire, it seemed like they could have walked there in like just a matter
around.
Of seconds. Yeah. You know what I mean? It didn't seem like it was that much of a distance between where they were.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, that's because immediately they went into the melted walker.
That was awesome.
Zone.
That was one of my favorite scenes.
That
in this
was
entire
the best
episode.
Zombies I've seen in a while. And I've seen there's some really good ones this season in particular, but those were the best freaking ones.
They were nasty.
Melted asphalt zombies.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my favorite was when Daryl took the head of the walker and banged the cop.
That was awesome.
That scene
and
was
disgusting.
Yeah. That scene, you know, I know if Daryl dies, we all riot. I know that. But that scene, for a second, I'm just like,
what is he doing? His hand is in his mouth. Get it.
His hand is in his mouth, and then he happens to just let go as the walker's about to chomp on his fingers.
Hands.
Which I thought was brilliant.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
And he gets the eyes. Oh my God, just kudos.
I was just thinking, he did this before Woodbury. He's got it, because he did the whole arena battle with Merle and with the walkers chained up around the side. I'm like, he's used to this thing. Daryl's got this. Actually, my mom texted me, and she was like, this show's kind of really gory.
I love
it was specifically
about The Walking Dead.
Yeah, specifically referencing this.
The entire night,
yeah, I came here, and I'm like, apparently this is a gory episode, because I got a text from my mom.
I was like, your mom was right, Dave.
Yeah. That one eyeball fucking thing. Yeah, anything with eyes, I'm like,
Yeah.
Even the way they had the walker surrounding Daryl when the cop was on top of him and strangling him, and the walkers, like, the mouths were chomping at almost at Daryl's face and everything. That was perfect.
That was crazy.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, this is they're very crunchy, gooey-ish walkers to be able that you could just rip off their head and get through their eyeball.
I thought of Scorpion's fatality in Mortal Kombat.
Oh, yeah,
he
ripped
out his spine, and it's like...
It's very much like that.
Yeah, it's pretty much like that.
Yeah. I wish it had just appeared. Fatality! And someone goes, whoopsie! Yeah, so they got, with that, Daryl wins the battle with the third cop, and then the other two are handcuffed and running away handcuffed, so it's pretty easy to... you assume you don't really need to see the action for that, because they're handcuffed. All right, whatever, they got them. So that's how they capture the cops, and there's this internal struggle with the cops themselves, as we find out from the cops, things that we kind of heard on the slide from Noah and other, during best scenes in the hospital, that there's all this inner struggle within the cops where they want a new leader. They don't like Dom, but some people are on their side, so it's just this inner turmoil and inner warfare.
We got some good insight,
the cops.
Though.
Yeah. I mean, who knows who was telling the truth and who was being honest and how much of it was truth and honesty. I mean, at this point, given the whole episode, I kind of think that Shepard was probably being completely honest.
Yeah.
Given that you're probably supposed to trust one of the cops, and we're given the red herring to trust.
Like, good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't understand. That was a little confusing to me as to whether or not to trust him. I would think... You know, we'll talk about Dawn a little bit, but I would think Dawn wants all the police officers she has. I don't think there's really bad cops that she wouldn't trade with. I honestly think that, you know, that was just a ploy for Shepard to be uncuffed and, you know, I'll handle it. Let me just go there and I'll handle it.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely could have been. But then you got Lamson, who seems to have the stronger word. Also, the fact that Noah stands up for Lamson earlier.
Yeah, said that he's the good one.
The good one.
Right. Yeah. Noah's like, oh, yeah, he's a good one. So.
Like, he'll be down for this.
Yeah, and then Lamson, like, immediately connecting with Rick, like, oh, dude, we're bros. I'm a cop.
Yeah, I
can tell by your the way you do your things that you're a cop or you were a cop or whatever. So.
I can tell by the way you handle yourself.
Right.
By the way you walk that strut. So, yeah, he immediately tries to appeal with the I can connect to you. And really, he's definitely, as we find out, and we see he's scheming, and he's very much a schemer, but he knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. He's been probably playing those cards with Dawn the whole time, too.
And I thought it was ironic that his name was Bob.
Yeah. I love how we see Sasha just perk up in the background. It's like, what?
Like, oh, another Bob.
Let me appeal to this guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I lost one Bob, but another one will do.
Quick
well,
to
at first, I was trying to figure out, like, had he overheard a conversation with Tyrese and her earlier to maybe that wasn't really his name, or it was, you know,
I was
because
wondering
it was
that
almost
too.
Like a scheme of his to let me play this off and act like, you know, get into her mind. And
but Noah would have called him out on it.
True. That's a good point.
Oh, yeah, good true. Point. Yeah, because I was wondering the same things with Daryl, but that's
yeah,
a great
that's
point.
True.
Yeah,
that's true.
And I don't think he really assumed he was going to be in a position with Sasha like that where he can play on her and do what he did at the end of the episode.
Yeah, I didn't know that if he was just kind of like scheming, like kind of checking the land of the lay for everyone to figure out who he could manipulate and who he couldn't.
So. That would be good foresight, but I don't know if he was really that.
Well,
I'm giving him too much smart credit. So.
I predict she's going to take his shirt next and wear it around.
That's a good one, actually.
His cop vest, and then she
actually collects all shirts that belong to Bob's.
Yeah.
These are the Bob's I know.
She was very creepy before everything happened, and now she still is. Basically, it's just, next level of it. Yeah, so that I guess that's the main point with this. And again, we just get Rick's leadership really throughout, and he's really, once again, the leader. You really see that established throughout these scenes.
Yeah.
Looking up to him.
And even the respect that Bob is giving Rick with the whole cop talk and everything like that. I think even in the end, which obviously I think was a very telling line, too, when he wants to call him Lamson, and he's like, no, you don't have to call me that. I'm not a cop. He's like, there are no good cops. There are no cops anymore.
There are no cops anymore,
And I think that was a play on he was going to turn, and he was going to do what he did at the end, too.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing, and no one noticed.
No one noticed.
Don't trust anyone.
I don't know. I think, like, during the whole part with him, like, saying, like, oh, my friend's out there, you guys were like, no.
I was like, don't do it, Sasha.
It was weird. Yeah, it was definitely a weird thing.
Yeah.
I wonder if that story is true, but he just used it to kind of get her into
manipulate
that position.
Her. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to wonder. I guess we'll never know, unless next week they tell us.
We might find out.
Maybe we'll find out.
By the way, shout out to the actor, Maximiliano Hernandez, who played Bob Lamson.
Cool.
He's doing a good job.
He's good.
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
All right, so their destination is the hospital, where we have this new development with Dawn, where now I think they're trying to play it up so you start to like her a little bit more. So first you dislike her, and now you're starting to see her point of view and perspective. That's how I was thinking it, even though we have the doctor being like, no, you can't trust her. She obviously wants something, and that's Demon Edwards. But to me, it was like this case of, like, you see her power struggle at first, where she's having trouble with the cop and establishing her order, and she explains to Beth, like, you screwed us over because I can't not give the cop what he wants, essentially, which is his DVD charging.
Right.
So you screwed us over, but here's the medicine cabinet. Do what you want.
Well, talking about this now, I feel like maybe Dawn was being this nice to Beth to maybe pit her and the doctor against each other.
Maybe.
He really did kind of not favor her, but he really took to her, you know, nicely when she first showed up, when Dawn wasn't so nice to her. And I'm not saying, you know, it's a jealousy thing per se, but maybe she's trying to get the doctor down by doing that. I don't know.
See, I don't think of Dawn as a major villain. I don't see her like Jared or, you know, of course not the governor.
I don't think she's that conniving.
I don't think she's that conniving. I think, we talked about it a little bit a couple of weeks ago, but I just feel like this is a system that's in place where you have to give the security the respect, you know, the police the respect they deserve, and that some of these people are not great guys. I mean, when Beth complains to that other officer, you know, because of the resources are limited. She's like, well, you keep charging your DVD player every day. I mean, these people are living in a fantasy world where they have to get their rocks off, literally and figuratively, when you think of Gorman, you know, in order to protect and serve. They need to be treated like kings. They need to be treated with their movies and their courtesans, you know, the people they want to sleep with and whatever else. And Dawn is kind of like trying to keep the peace by keeping the peace officers happy. And I think Beth really, you know, undermined her when she went and said that. So I really do think she's a good character. I'm really curious to see this showdown next week that's probably going to happen between the two of them, because I don't see Dawn as an evil character. In fact, I could even see her, if she listens to reason and she's peaceful with Rick, I could even see her joining the group.
I agree. I don't think she's evil either. It's just more
not
of like
evil, but
she's I don't think she's a good leader, but she's doing what she thinks is best, and she thinks the way that she sees it is the only way that it works. But I mean, at the same time, she is very knowingly capturing people. Yeah. I mean, maybe she doesn't know what happens, but you kind of, at least I assume she would know that people are just literally running into.
I just wish she had some balls and told the other officers. I mean, obviously she's frightened that someone's going to take her out and then take over her spot.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But she's in a position where she can't really lead.
Yeah, you know? I was saying when we were watching, I was like, you really got to see that she really doesn't have power.
Yeah.
There's no power with her. Just the way that she was arguing with the cop back and forth, it was...
Yeah. And I think the reason why she might not barter with Rick is because she doesn't want to lose face with the other officers as well. Again, it's a really trepidatious position she's in.
So maybe Shepard was right. Maybe she does know they want to replace her with Lamson.
Yeah, I'm sure it's something like that.
So she wants to save face by, you know, maybe in the future not... what's the word I'm looking for? Not bartering with Rick.
Yeah, I guess. I still think it's weird that Lamson just ran off, though. I guess he could have. I don't know if he could have gotten out of those.
That was kind of funny the way
he just like knocked Sasha out on the window and ran like a scared rabbit.
Yeah,
you
I was
know?
Like, how far is he really going to get?
You know? I mean, like, in that condition. Yeah, but it's really interesting to see.
Yeah, well, it did what he could, I guess, even though they were they were trying to get him back alive, so I guess whatever his alternate plan is, it's better than getting back alive.
But he didn't kill Sasha. I mean, no. I don't know if he could have, so maybe that's something, too. It's still kind of confusing.
Well, I mean, he was still handcuffed, so I guess his idea was like, okay, knocked her out, and I can just go run, and as opposed to, like, stomping on her face and wasting more time.
God.
But in a lot of ways, even though he played to her and manipulated her, I still felt like I was surprised that Sasha kind of fell into it so easily, you know, just to even think like, okay, we have this guy captured. Maybe I do need to pay attention to what he's doing and not have him behind me, even though he's in handcuffs, you know?
Well, she saw Rick really trust him. I mean, you know, she was the one that handed him the water bottle to give to Lamson. So I think it was kind of just, she felt comfortable sort of being friendly towards him. I don't know.
And it was also the emotional state she was in, too.
I mean, that's true.
And you combine both of those things.
Hey, there's Bob, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
that's her weakness.
That's what it was. Yeah, it's just the Bobs.
She swoons at the name.
She's not in a good spot, though, no matter what.
Bob.
Yeah. Bob. Oh.
Oh, yeah.
So then the question is, and Nando, I suppose you'd fall on the side when I explain, well, specific side, but the question remains with what Dr. Stephen Edwards said when he was talking to Beth, who ends up pretty easily getting the meds to Carol. But when he says, Dawn is trying to manipulate you right now, that's what this whole thing with medicine is, and I assume that your side, Nando, is that she's not, and she's just still just trying to do her best to keep things together.
I don't think she is. I think she even acknowledged Beth. She said, I thought you were weak, but you're not.
Right.
But
you're not, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think she was trying to manipulate either. I mean, Dr. Stevens has... I agree with you. Like, I think...
Now, my only...
Stevens is like, I was just trying to save my life. I'm still not sure if I did it. You know, he's just like, he doesn't know what he's doing.
My biggest problem with the episode is the guy who coughs with the strawberries. And he didn't eat the strawberries before he coughed. I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
he could have
eaten those strawberries. Because remember, we were all like, oh, maybe he's going to fake blood with the strawberries, do some type of thing. Nope. Strawberries still in
the I figured the trade-off was either like, okay, so at first I thought the trade-off was, oh, he gets strawberries to do this thing. Yeah. And that's like, Beth is giving him the strawberries. Because, you know, you have to, if you ever you take something, then you have to pay it off with duties later. So I thought that's what it was. It was like, okay, you got the strawberries. But then if he's like coughing all that, the cops are going to see the strawberries and just take it.
Right.
So he's going to lose the strawberries. Or then what we were like later is like, oh, maybe that's what he was using for fake blood because it's red. And then there wasn't anything. Yeah. So it's just
like, what is happening?
And then he just comes out of it and he's just like, oh, yeah, you know, I don't know why I was coughing. Everything's okay now.
But I have these strawberries magically in my hand. Yeah, I was also like,
just another thing in this episode.
That was a little bit of a stretch to me.
I mean, I took it to be like, they have to keep the show moving, so just assume like, oh, he got the trade-off, and then he goes.
Yeah.
That's what I take it as, it's writing, keep the show moving, but I'm still like, I want to see him eat those or hide them away, stash them. I think about those things, especially with strawberries. You can make a nice smoothie with those.
Details. Mm.
Don't know if they have the power to make smoothies, but you
can make a smoothie in his mouth, just swirl around.
Delicious.
<That's gross. laughs>
Then you literally have teeth that just swirl. Mm. So our final storyline that we get is a big one with Abraham.
Yeah.
And it's essentially everything, the aftermath of Abraham smashing Eugene's face apart, essentially.
Abraham bothered me this entire episode.
Yeah.
I was like, get up, man. He's in that position.
He's stubborn.
It's just... that was a really weak point that I didn't want to see Abraham in.
Yeah, it's also... at this point, it's been at least months, you'd assume, since everything, at least I'd assume, since everything happened with Eugene. And yeah, he lost his new mission, and that's awful, and he's back to square one in a lot of ways, but you'd still think he would have moved on from what happened before from those months of time to not go right back to an emotional void.
Well, I mean, don't forget, this is probably the weakness that we have from, you know, watching every week a different you know, group, and then all of a sudden then just merging them all together. I mean, I think he was really affected when Maggie pulled a gun on him from that last time we saw him, and he thinks he's a monster. I mean, later on he even says, you know, I kind of wanted you to kill me when Maggie asks him. So I think he's just, like, being very defiant, and, yeah, he's lost, and he's a soldier. He's, like, you know, kind of like those really focused soldiers that are waiting for their next mission. Yeah. Like, he's just there, like,
that's what I was gonna say.
Gone.
Yeah, a lot of soldiers, without a mission, they're lost, you know, and that's
Where
his character, it's
purpose. No purpose, and he's just like there, just like almost like you can't move him.
Well, the other point too to that is that he finally takes, and both on the monster ideology and the soldier mission, is that when he finally takes the water, it's very specifically after it turns out that Eugene's okay. Mm-hmm. It's not even Maggie being nice, and where he seems to open up a little bit, but he finally takes the water, which is the big indicator, after Eugene's okay. So it's after he's less of a monster because he didn't murder another person. It's after Eugene, who gave him this mission that he has, is almost like the mission leader in a lot of ways, is okay. So both of those aspects could play out there for why he came back.
I took him taking the water, too, as him sort of taking his life back. I mean, his lapse was pretty momentary. It was really short. But, like, taking that water, which is a symbol of life, it was kind of like, okay, let's move life on. Let's keep going.
Yeah.
So
it's definitely some humanity that it showed. And I think the water, obviously, is very symbolic in general. Even, like, with the anagram that they created, Gratum.
Yeah.
You know, they were all water bottles that they were written on top of. And while Glenn and Tara and Rosita went off, you know, to get more water.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely very thematic from that group.
They don't have much, but they have Sharpies.
Yeah, and I love how they conveniently found walkers that had, like, nets in their jackets
that
they could use to catch the fish. I was like, how convenient is that these, you know, members-only jackets are found on these walkers
here? Down south, I would think you know, it's too hot to wear those kinds of things.
I mean, winter time. You
Maybe
wear that
they
stuff
died during winter. But I was like, did they actually see the mesh lining
as they walked by them? Yeah.
Or do they just assume those kind of jackets all have mesh lining? Either way, it worked out very nicely.
Yeah, it was very fortunate. And Tara got her yo-yo. She gets to have some humanity again and, like, just ignore with the world and...
Well,
and that's also something we saw too, is like some various ignore the world type of situations
throughout
this episode.
Just get over it.
Yeah. I think that was it. I mean, well, first of all, I mean, Glenn still has some hostility toward. I mean, there was that one bit that Glenn kind of had that hostility toward Eugene. It was probably good that he got away, but I think it was also good for them, the three of them, to decompress. And then this is the most that we've heard from Rosita since we first saw her.
Yeah.
So I thought it was kind of interesting to get a little bit of her backstory.
Yeah.
And even, like, what she was saying, you know, made Eugene sound a lot more valuable than what we're led to believe, that he can't run, he can't fight, all he's got is his wits, and he made that whole story up.
Yeah, I mean, he taught her how to filter water, which is actually really huge. So, and this is kind of what we were talking about last week, or a couple weeks ago, was what is Eugene's strength going to be that he pulls out, and it'll be interesting to see his character develop now that he doesn't have the story anymore. He can use that intelligence of his to really grow and expand and become a viable member of the group in his own way.
Yeah.
With things like filtering water, which is pretty important.
Yeah.
I mean, mud water, pretty good, but filtered water, a little bit better.
Yeah.
I was also curious, and I might be reading too much into this, but that little scene between Rosita and Glenn, like, they kind of lingered on it, and it made me a little nervous that maybe he's kind of like...
Nobody would leave. I thought the same thing.
You
nobody would leave Maggie.
Glenn is kind of a ladies' man in this show. I mean, he's got Maggie, and Tara's definitely bonded with him, and now he's got this scene with Tara and Rosita just hanging out. Like,
I mean, I don't want it to be that, but I feel like they lingered
on
that.
I agree.
And he was just like, "You're sticking around. Are you in?" He's like,
I will say this, we don't watch the talking yet. Usually I watched last week, but I'm not watching again anyway because I got other things to do. But Christian Serrato, we got to see the first minute, and Christian Serrato cleans up incredibly. I mean, she's hot on the show.
She's hot on the show, yeah.
But oh my god,
she's beautiful.
No. I've got a major, major crush. Listen, seeing her for that minute. I'm sorry,
you don't leave Maggie. No. You don't leave Maggie. That doesn't happen.
I'm down with Rosita.
When Maggie's free, you can swoop in. Be her white knight.
Totally. Oh my god.
I don't think Maggie needs that though.
And if you haven't seen Talking Dead, see Talking Dead.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
So yeah. Like, what was I going to talk about? No, I
said, you're like, Maggie, what?
Like, hold on a sec. My word. No, there was actually, like, a decent, real point that I had to that. And
sorry.
Simply, like,
I got lost.
Sorry,
got lost
Dave.
Maggie,
you
Lane.
Do not leave Maggie, and then what were you going to say?
There's nothing else.
Aww, okay.
Oh, okay. The other thing I was going to say was with Glenn is, in a lot of ways, I think that he's starting to be looked at as the leader in this group, and he slowly has been becoming that, even though he keeps on giving it up to Abraham. He's like, no, buddy, you're in charge. But I think you see a lot of people really look to him, and even Abraham's realized that. So I think that Glenn is really becoming the true leader, and I think that's what that scene might have been, as opposed to necessarily love thing. Because really, Rosita has Abraham, even though she's pissed off at him.
Yeah.
And Glenn has Maggie. Yeah, and I mean, yeah, there's a chance that maybe they're interested in each other, but I saw it as maybe a shifting of powers and leadership.
I don't know about Glenn. I don't know about Glenn being a leader, but I think he's very approachable, and I think that makes him very, you know, like, high up on the food chain. Like, he's the guy that you can talk sense into because he's relatable. Yeah. I actually think Maggie is a better leader. For some reason, I feel like she seems to have really grown into
her. She definitely has those qualities.
Yeah.
I would turn to her as a leader, too.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, I kind of see her a lot of ways as like the Daryl of the group in some ways. Like, she's the becoming like the badass killer, can take care of any situation. But when you see people following someone, even though Maggie's very much in charge and she doesn't take anything and she'll do what she wants and people don't question it, it really seems like people look to Glenn, like, what's his decision
going to be?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I was noticing.
And I think this will also change because Abraham will probably be looked at as more of a loose cannon after this episode, too.
Yeah.
So.
Or maybe what we're saying is Glenn and Maggie's just power couple.
Maybe.
That's what it really is, the power couple.
They're the Brangelina of The Walking Dead.
Yeah, exactly. But Eugene is okay, so I think if we do get this group next week, that's what we're really going to see is how are they going to react to Eugene now for real, now that they have to actually approach him and confront him about what happened outside of punching him in the face. And
he's paralyzed.
I realize that he's paralyzed. But again, this is like one of those confounding moments that I think everybody just assumed, like even reading on comments or everywhere else after the last episode we saw with them, that, okay, mission's not going to happen at the D.C. Mission not accomplished. So they're going to go back to the church. And that's I think that was one of the big shockers, to see them still out there. And again, that's why I was – the whole time thing is just confusing this episode. That's the one thing. I think you can kind of overlook it, but it's still, when you think about it, it's like –
like, what is going on?
Yeah. Why didn't they go back to the church? Why aren't they thinking that way?
Yeah, the other thing, that's what we were talking about while we were watching, it was just like, why not just put him in the truck and then drive back?
Well, they were afraid to move him, but...
I guess, like, I mean, and the one thing I was thinking was, like, well, I guess if he has a concussion, which he was hit in the head multiple times, that's the one thing you don't want to do is move someone with a concussion. So that would be the possible answer to it, so... There's both sides of the table.
Yeah.
Both sides of that coin. So that, I think, pretty much wraps up all the points of this episode. So let's go ahead and talk about news and gossip.
Oh, yeah.
I'll do it myself.
Well, speaking of Rosita, we got a lot of her this episode, like we said. Christian Serratos, who is the actress who's beautiful and great in the show. She was answering a lot of questions from her fans, her Twitter followers, and I don't know if it was live tweeting, but she was answering some questions, and I'll just say a couple of things that she mentioned about the show. Someone asked her about what was it like to do her first walker kill, and she said it was her favorite activity on set. And someone asked if Norman Reedus is actually as hot as he is on TV, and she said, hell yes. And she also answered a question, does she have nightmares about zombies catching her? And she said, yes, she does. And when she's not on set, she likes to shoot her bow and eat. So I guess she's an archer, which is kind of cool.
Wow. Katniss.
Yeah. And she says the funniest person on set is Steve Yuen. And she says, sorry, Josh McDermott, who plays Eugene.
Well, Steve Yuen, improv. Improv.
Oh, okay.
Well, they both do improv.
Yeah,
as we learned when Josh was here.
Yeah.
So that's kind of all I gathered that really has to do with the show. She does talk about some more personal things. So check out her Twitter, which is oh my gosh, It's C. Serratos something. Oh my god.
At first I was like, your Twitter. Oh my gosh. I was like, wow, this is a great Twitter name again.
I'm so bad at this. I don't have it. Shoot, I feel really bad.
That's all good. But check out her Twitter.
Check out her Twitter. She's the first one that pops up if you type in C. Serratos.
There you go. Or just type in, oh my gosh. And
no, don't do
you're
that.
You're there. All right. And guys, as you've heard us talking to the live chat throughout multiple weeks, if you ever want to be a part of it, we do film, tape the show every week, 9 p.m. Pacific time on Sundays. And also, please do comment, rate us positive or negative. Just let us know how you feel. If it's negative, just let us know how we can make the show better for you guys on both iTunes and YouTube. We really appreciate it. All your comments help us try to make the show better for you guys to listen to or watch if you're on YouTube's, whichever.
Yeah.
Or check out live, which you should do too. So let's go ahead and go to predictions.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
Do you still think Noah's going to die?
I still think Noah's going to die, and I do think that we're going to have Don joining the group with Rick.
Yeah.
I do think that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think Noah's going to die, too. And I think that over time, Gabriel's going to surprise us as much as we want him dead.
No, I want him.
Yeah, I think Gabriel's going to be okay.
I think Rick might get into him. Like, he might finally come through to his dense skull.
Well, something... I guess this is almost right, maybe, but it was in the coming previews, if you guys don't want to tune in. But in the coming previews, we see Rick yelling at Gabriel, it looks like. At least I believe that was something that flashed, because it got cut off for us with our DVR. But then the other thing that we saw was, we saw Sasha just fine, hanging out on a roof, ready to shoot and snipe things, so Sasha's okay, so... That is another thing that was in the coming previews, that at least like a little snippet that we got.
Yeah, we saw her getting ready to shoot.
Not that, I wasn't worried at all during the show itself anyways, but there's like, there you go, she's fine.
I kind of want to see Dawn with the group, because I'm really, again, she's a very complex character, I think, based on the way she leads.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see her interact with Rick, but I feel like Dr. Shepard actually would be more likely to join the group, I think, especially
Edwards?
Considering Dr. Edwards.
Edwards.
Yeah. Shepard. Shepard's the cop.
The cop,
thank you. I do that every week. I mess up somebody's
Shepard from Mass Effect.
Yeah,
you really think about Mass Effect, it's okay, we get it.
Yes. We're human.
I'm thinking about Mass Effect, exactly.
Yep.
So Dr. Edwards, because I just think that they need Dr. Edwards right now, the way Carol's in, if they're going to move Carol. That if they're gonna go on a journey, they're gonna need a doctor.
Although he already gave Beth the info for how to take care
of her. It's more than that, though. He just gave
her
the medicine.
Moving forward.
But no, I agree. I don't think that Dawn is going to be part of the group. Even though I do think it would be interesting. It's just her place very much seems to be in this world. It'd be cool to see how she handles it outside of that, but I don't see that actually happening. But, yeah, I think I agree with you as well, Nando. If anyone joins, it would probably be Dr. Steven Edwards, just for the sake of they need a doctor. And why not? And Beth might vouch for her, maybe. Now she's kind of, like, iffy about him, but she might. And he's kind of was trying to make his case again this episode of being like, I just want to live. So he's trying to make his case of why he killed the doctor. And it's an understandable point as much as it sucks. So we'll see what happens with it. But that's what's happening next week. So...
Not next week, probably. It's probably...
It's next week. I looked it up on IMDb. Apparently,
they're still going to do it after Thanksgiving?
Next week is the finale, for the mid-season finale, I believe.
Okay. So, cool. Thanksgiving finale, apparently. So, guys, we'll see you next week. Thank you so much for joining in. Once again, I'm Dave Klein. You can find me on Twitter at TheDaveKlein. That is K-L-E-I-N.
You can find me on Twitter at Nandovel, N-A-N-D-O-V-E-L, and here for Homeland and Scorpion.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at JAJOURI and Christian Serratos at C. Serratos. I clarify that.
You can find me at Dario Christian on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can find my name probably at the bottom of the screen right now, and also BlackHollywoodLive.com.
There you go. Perfect. Bottom of the screen. See you guys next time. Later.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.